We all know how valuable photos and video clips of a loved one are. But have you thought about capturing their full story in their own words as an audio podcast or as a video? At GK Media, we've been working with families, hospices, and nursing homes across Ireland over the past 10 years to help preserve precious memories. We help you celebrate the voices, special moments, and wisdom of your loved ones by recording your meaningful conversations together. Record in our Galway studio, or we can travel to you bringing our own recording equipment. Whether it's a tribute, life story, or message for future generations, we capture it with care and compassion. Visit gkmedia.ie/legacy and let us help you tell the story that deserves to be remembered.
Hey everyone, just before we begin this week's episode, I have a quick favor to ask you all. If you love the show, it would mean so much if you could take a moment to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to right now, or share it with a friend, tell them all about it, or leave a quick comment. And when you see the videos on social media, please comment there too, because it really, really helps me to keep this podcast going. Thank you all so, so much. Hi, so I'm back today with another guest and I'm delighted to have Niamh Ruan with me today. Hi, Niamh.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. So Niamh, you are from Uachtaráid.
Yeah.
Which is just on the way out to Connemara, if anyone doesn't know.
Yeah.
Born and raised there, yeah?
My whole life. Never been anywhere else.
Nowhere else?
No.
That's good. You're only young.
Yeah.
So come here, tell me, you're from there, mom, dad, siblings?
My dad grew up there originally. He was born there, lived there his entire life. And then my mum was born in Cork, but then moved down to Galway, I think, when she was like 4.
Wow.
She was young enough anyways. And then she kind of lived all over Galway, so like everywhere. Like I'd say she had so many houses, I don't actually know. But she lived, and then she met my dad through her college friends, I think.
Okay.
And then he was like, I'm not moving from Galway. I'm not moving from Uachtaráid. He's like, never, never moving. So I've been in Uachtaráid.
Do you pronounce it Uachtaráid?
Uachtaráid, yeah.
Okay, so here's me like, Uachtaráid.
Everyone says it, it's okay. Yeah. It's like the Irish version.
Yeah. And so they got married, and then in terms of siblings, how many do you have?
So I have a half-sister. So my dad had a child before he met my mum.
Mm-hmm.
So I have her, and she lives with her mum in Moycullen. And then I have my younger brother and younger sister that are my mom and dad's children, like, so I'm the oldest at home.
Your modern family, so.
Yeah, my modern family.
Yeah. A younger brother and a younger sister.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what was life like growing up? All good?
So, all good. Like, Uachtaráid is such a nice place to be brought up. Like, everyone's it's such like a tight-knit community.
Okay.
So, like, everybody knows everyone. And, like, my mom and dad were so well-known. Like, I could be walking down the street in anywhere and they'd be like, you're Cliona and Malachy's daughter. And I'm like, yeah, like I could never get away with anything because everybody knew who I was.
Okay. Real small town.
A real small town, but really nice.
So tell me about your dad. Your dad's Malachy.
My dad's Malachy,
so
yeah.
So tell me about him. What was he like?
He was amazing. First of all, he was such a good dad. Not only just a dad, but like a friend to everyone. Like everyone loved my dad. Like if you knew him, everyone was always, or people were always talking how amazing he was. But like growing up, he was a carpenter. So he was working in, you know, fitting carpets since we met everyone. So he loved doing the little bit of handiwork. So he's always doing something, some project at home. So we originally lived in a small little house and it didn't have a garden. And my dad had always been like, because like me and my brother and my sister were all very sporty. And we all love playing football and stuff. So he's like, I want to move somewhere with a nice big garden. So that was his. He was in his element then when we moved because we had such a big garden. He was out gardening and cutting timber. Timber was his thing.
Right.
It was like he'd go out and he'd cut timber on his days off from work and stuff. He'd go out and cut timber and it was just his bit of peace, yeah. But no, dad was lovely. Like he was really, really nice. Lovely to everyone. Lovely to me. Lovely to mum. Like I had a really nice upbringing at home, like with parents wise. There was never anything like.
And he was always fit and healthy?
Always fit and healthy. He'd kind of always had a little bit of stomach problems, like just But he was kind of, he'd just be taking medication maybe like once or twice a week.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of keep it
like at IBS
bay.
And that
yeah,
kind of
like I don't think they thought anything too crazy of it. Or
okay.
It's kind of just, he lived with it. Like it wasn't something that bothered him too much anyways.
Okay. And so then when did things, symptoms begin to change for him?
So it kind of started of March, April 2022. He played a lot of sports himself, so he was very fit. But you could kind of notice, like I was 14 now, so I was quite young in the sense of I might have missed some stuff. Whereas yeah. now I would be a bit more
You're
aware.
Hearing the stories. Yeah.
But he kind of was just getting a lot more tired, and I think the stomach cramps were just beginning to get, it was like different. It hurt more. So that's kind of when it originally started. And I think mom was kind of like, maybe just go in and check it out again. Because it had been going on for a long time. Like he's had these problems for a couple of years now, like the stomach, but they just got progressively worse.
Hmm.
Just pain-wise and energy-wise. His energy was down, his pain was down. But you're like, he wouldn't, like I only found this out because my mom was telling me this, because he never would ever complain about the pain he was in. That was one thing about dad, even throughout like the treatment and everything, he never once said how much pain he was in, and he never would let on.
Yeah,
I think just because, you know.
But you could probably know by looking at him.
You could tell by looking at him, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, April was when it started getting really bad, just after my brother's communion.
Okay.
So
he went to the doctor then?
So he went to the doctor, and I think within maybe a couple of days, they came back and were like, it's pancreatic cancer. So
that quick?
It was very, very quick diagnosis and very quick into treatment. It was like, I think a week, and then he was
on treatment
straight away on chemotherapy.
So he was obviously sent into the hospital and that?
Yeah, sent into the hospital, and he'd do chemo in the hospital. And even just the first couple of weeks watching him on chemo, like you could see the change from maybe the time last year to like when he started treatment originally. Like he was just shattered. Like he was in bed.
Sick
in bed. Like, and
can I ask, so at that time you were what, 14, 15? 14,
yeah.
So for you, like this, because there's so many people that listen to this with, let's say, 14-year-old
yeah.
children or whatever. Like, do you remember, did they obviously come in and tell you that he had had cancer? Was that?
So I remember it. I was chatting to my mum about this actually before I went in, just to kind of recall it all. But So I was up at my neighbour's house, and my mum and dad had gone in to get the results, obviously. And I didn't know, I wasn't expecting it to be cancer, because no young girl was going to be thinking, oh, dad's going to come out with cancer. It just wasn't on my mind. But I went down home anyways, and my mum just pulled me in before she told my younger brother and my younger sister. She was like, look, your dad got diagnosed with cancer, and kind of explained it all to me, and was like, whatever questions you'll have, we'll answer. Like, we're not going to keep anything from you. Like, whatever you want to know, we'll tell you. And I just remember, I was like, dad, like my dad, Maliki has cancer. I actually couldn't believe it, because obviously you hear stuff online, you're like, cancer, I immediately went to, okay, worst case scenario.
Mm.
My mum was like, just don't. The one thing my mum said to me was like, just don't Google any of the like
prognosis and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Because she's like, that's not going to help you at all. Like, she had the proper books from the doctors, and she was like, anything you have, ask me or dad and we'll both tell you.
Did you appreciate that? Like, even now looking back,
I definitely appreciate the honesty, because I think it made the whole process a little easier for me, that I knew kind of what was happening, when it was happening, what was going on, and what I could expect to see coming.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Okay. So they were realistic with you and honest.
Yeah. But I don't, like, at the start, it wasn't it wasn't a serious cancer. Like, it was one tumor in his stomach.
Okay.
That was it. It wasn't anything like out of the ordinary, like. So he started treatment then. I think it was May. Yeah, he started May. Treatment all throughout the summer. So it was hard seeing him at home in bed. And I think it was very hard on him, although he didn't let on to us. He wasn't. But I could just see, like, I'm a very emotionally intelligent, I'd like to say. Like, I can read a person really well. And I could just see the change in Dad and his personality, because Dad is so funny.
Yeah.
Like, he was so funny. He could make anyone laugh. And you could kind of see that the personality, he'd be more tired and he'd be kind of, there'd be less crack.
Okay.
And obviously because he was so sick, he was in bed a lot of the time. So it kind of took away from the family.
Yeah.
In, like, because, you know, we'd have dinner, the five of us at the table, and then it was sometimes Dad was there, sometimes Mum was there, or sometimes we'd just bring dinner down to Dad. Like, it was very, it was a lot, it was a big change.
As you find, you, as a teenager then, that was obviously hard for you. Even at the time, you could, you're probably feeling a sense of loneliness maybe.
And I just remember I was so scared.
Really?
I'd be afraid to, like, if I left the house to go meet up with my friends or something, because it was summertime, I'd be texting my mum and I'd be texting my dad. I'd be like, hey, so are you okay? What's going on? Because I was just so terrified that something would happen while I was gone.
Right.
Because I was just so nervous and I was so afraid that something would happen to him. So that was hard. That was quite hard, trying to be like, I can enjoy myself and it's okay.
But you weren't able to.
But I wasn't able to. And I felt, obviously being the oldest, I felt a lot of responsibility for my brother and sister. I was like...
Did you?
Yeah, I definitely was like, okay, how are they feeling? What can I do for them? I'll play with them for an hour. I'll sit down with them for an hour.
Wow.
Because I just felt it was...
14 yourself.
I was 14 myself. Wow. My sister was 6 or 7.
Mm.
And my brother, I think, was maybe 11, 10, 11.
God.
So they were quite young as well. But so was I. Like, I was quite young, but I definitely was just like, I need to look after them. Mm. I feel like I definitely did put them out of myself a bit.
Okay.
During that period of time, because
it was just that responsibility of the eldest, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just falls to you. And, like, you know, it just sounds like you're explaining it, I suppose, so well, in a way that, like, people don't realize the change of your whole house. It affects everyone.
It affects everything. And like, every little thing changes. It's not like, we had people calling constantly, like, to the house at dinner, and like, the support we got from everyone was amazing, but like, it wasn't the same family that it was a couple months ago. Like, we couldn't sit down, or we used to go for like walks on a Sunday to like the windmills or something like that and have like a nice family walk, and those kind of got cut out because just dad was just wasn't able.
Yeah.
But then, so treatment then went on all summer, and in September he went in and they were like, he's way better, the cancer, the chemo has worked, we'll put him on radiation. So it was just, it was less heavy treatment, and we could kind of, in our heads, we were like, okay, life can kind of start getting back to normal a bit now. Like, dad's better, everything's great. My mum was still working at the time.
Yeah.
My mom's a primary school teacher.
Okay.
So she was working throughout all this because she didn't need to be at home.
Okay.
Because it wasn't as bad.
He didn't need care.
No.
Yeah.
So he got the all clear then in September. I'm sure we were all delighted. We were like, dad's better.
And he was delighted himself.
Oh, he was over the moon. He was making his plans as what we're going to do now next summer. We were planning on going away. We were going to go to Spain or something like that. So it was great news. He told everyone. And then, so that year, it was still 2022, September of 2022. I was going into my junior cert year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of like, right, no excuses now. I have to knuckle down. I have to do my work now. I can't be using it as an excuse. So third year, obviously, you do a lot of work. You do a lot of study. And to be fair, at the start, I did do my study. I did after school study, so
yeah,
I could go home and then relax. And then I think it was shortly after Halloween, Dad went in for one of his, they do the checkups, obviously, because they have to make sure that it's
scans
are all clear and stuff. And this was the one scan that he went into by himself. Mum had always gone into the scan, to the appointments with him, just because she'd wanted to.
Mm.
But this is the one thing she didn't go into, because he was like, oh, you don't need to. Like, I'm sure it will all be fine. And obviously it wasn't fine. He came back and was like, so he told Mom first, and they kind of didn't know how to tell us because it had been a month and a half and we were already going to go back to how it was. So they came in and they told us anyways that the cancer had come back, but it had actually spread. And it had gotten more serious and had gotten more harmful. So I was so upset because I was like, it was supposed to be better, you know, my life was supposed to move on from here, but it's not, like,
within a month and a half.
Within a month and a half, I think it was, yeah.
Wow.
Which was crazy to think, because a month and a half ago the scans were fine.
Yeah.
And in such quick time it had changed.
And how was he feeling?
He had noticed that the stomach pains had come back a bit, but he didn't think anything of it. Yeah. He thought maybe it was just like the radiation, exactly, or something like that, because
yeah,
he'd never gone through something like this before.
Mm.
So,
and they told you the truth again. They told me
everything,
right?
Because I wanted to know. I knew myself that I wanted to know what was going on. I don't know. Did they tell my brother and sister? They obviously told
their younger, yeah,
them that dad had cancer again, and he's going to have to go into hospital a bit more. But I'm not sure how much they told them, because they didn't need to know. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to know.
Mm.
But so straight after that, mum was kind of like, this cancer, the cancer that has came back is a bit more angry than the last one. So dad will be a lot sicker this time because of the chemo. He needed to go up on higher doses and all that stuff. So we decided before he'd go back onto treatment, we'd kind of take, at the time we thought it was just a holiday, but my mum says now her and dad kind of agreed it'd be kind of like the last holiday, because we didn't know would we be able to or whatever. So we went up to Dublin for 2 nights, and it was really, really nice. We went to the zoo, we went for food, and we did a bit of shopping, and we kind of did the Christmas markets and stuff. So it was lovely, and we had all had that kind of last bit of family normality before it kind of all went south after that, because that's when it started getting really bad. So it was really nice to spend those last couple of nice moments with him, and to remember those nice times, because what we were going to go into was awful.
Okay.
So we came back then, and he started treatment straight away. And it's my birthday in December. I'm a Christmas baby. So I remember I was turning 15, and I had to spend that birthday by myself, because dad was in hospital and my mum was gone. So it was just a lonely time. Like, my friends stayed the night because I was like, I can't be by myself. Like, please, please be with me. And then like the day of my birthday, I went into hospital to see my dad. I had to sit on the end of the hospital bed while he was chatting to me, which was horrific. It was no way I thought I was going to spend my 15th birthday like sitting on the edge of a hospital bed.
Yeah.
We were lucky that it was all in Galway. I'm grateful that he wasn't in Dublin or anywhere like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad it was Galway, so I could kind of go in and out as I please, because the buses run in and out from Uchtdaragh to Galway. So it was nice that I could go and see him and all this, but it was just hard because I didn't feel like I had anyone to talk to about it, because my friends obviously were 15. They don't understand what it was like to be going through this at all.
And even if they didn't understand, like, I'd say they wouldn't know what to do with that. Even if you felt like bringing it up.
Yeah, they just didn't know what to say. And I think they just didn't want to make me upset even by like bringing him up, because...
So it was a no-go. No one spoke about it.
Sometimes people are like, oh, I hope you're doing all right and stuff like this. Because obviously it's an awkward thing to bring up. Like, if I hadn't gone through it and one of my friends was going through it, I wouldn't know what to do.
But in that, what did that feel like for you? Totally lonely?
I just felt so lonely because I felt like the only person I could talk to about it was like my dad, but he was in hospital. So it was I kind of looked a lot online for like people who were going through something similar.
Mm.
So would have been really nice if I knew about this during that time, because I could have listened to other people's, like, relate to them and stuff. But so kind of Christmas time was when I really started noticing the changes in dad, and how the changes in the family. Like, he, at Christmas Eve, he was getting sick out the window because of the pain he was in. He wasn't able, like, that Christmas was awful, like, looking back. Like, it really was. Like, obviously, my sister was young at the time, so we, you know, was all excitement. Santa came and everyone, we'd always go up to my mum and dad's bed and we'd sit in their bed and open our stockings before we'd go downtown or downstairs to the sitting room. And even dad, like when we were opening our stockings, he put on a happy face and everything, but you could just see he was really upset. And I think that Christmas was a really hard Christmas for me because I kind of knew in my gut myself that like if I do have another Christmas, it won't be like a really nice, happy, happy Christmas. So Christmas came and went then, and we went into January, and that's kind of when he decided to come off treatment and just go into hospice because he was just in way too much pain. Like he wasn't able for it. And I think himself, he wanted to be able to experience a bit of life, not stuck to IVs or treatments or stuff like that before he passed. Like, but it was really scary because I had my mocks, my junior cert mocks, the last week of January. And we had a huge, huge scare. He got rushed into hospital. From what I remember and from what I was told, I think he nearly passed away that January. We went in to see him. And I think that was his realization that he wants to experience stuff, do stuff he wants to do before he passes. He doesn't want to be sick or anything like that. So that was a big, big change in point in him and the dynamics of everyone. So I obviously didn't set my mocks because I was just in and out of Galway constantly. My mum was in with him. Now my granddad, my mum's dad, he came down and stayed with us a lot because my mum was in with my dad in hospital. So it was me, my brother and my sister and my granddad at home then for that period of time because my mum was looking after my dad. So I'd get the bus in, I'd get the 11 o'clock bus in, and I'd get the 4 o'clock bus out, and I'd pick my brother up from school some days and he'd come in with me. And we'd go in and we'd have the chat with dad and have the crack. And even in the hospital though, he'd still be messing. Like he used to have these like sweets beside his bed. And he was just like, he'd be like, the flavors in these are amazing. Like he'd just have the crack with us when we were in there and kind of make it not a sad hospital visit, but more of like a happy, fun hospital visit, which was really nice because it made it easier and it made it easier leaving.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I wasn't worried about him. Like if he was all doom and gloom, you'd be leaving and you'd feel bad and you'd be worried. But because it was such a fun hospital visit, it was like...
He kept you going, like,
Exactly, yeah. But then, that whole month of February, he was just deteriorating the entire time. Like, and I think then it was, I'm trying to think back of all the dates. Like it was just so quick.
And so what were, let's say February when he starts deteriorating, is there conversations had with you?
There was a conversation had with me in February with my mum. Dad was in hospital that night. My mum just went up to my room and she was like, we're not sure how long dad has left. They were like, we think it could be 3 months. So just so you're aware, if you want to do anything with your dad or if you want anything said to your dad, now would be a time to do it.
And were you in shock or were you accepting like that he's not going to be here?
I think I was in shock, but I just couldn't accept it. It took me ages to accept the fact that this was my life. That this was going to be my reality from now on, that I'm not going to have my dad around as a teenager. Like, so it was really hard to accept that. And I think it was really hard because the first time I saw my dad cry ever, I've never seen my dad cry in my life, was that the day after I went up to him and I was just kind of talking to him about everything and how I felt. And he just started bawling his eyes out and he was just in my arms and he was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I was like, it's not like, and I remember I was just crying with him because I was like, it's not your fault. I was like, it's not your fault that this is all happening. It's like, if we can just make it good, that's what he just kept saying, that we'll have fun and everything and we don't know what's going to happen and it might all be okay. But it was just the first time I saw him cry and I was just like, this, that's kind of when it hit me that this is really happening, that if my dad was crying about it, that this is, it was getting real. So, I kind of stopped putting effort into other things. I kind of hyper-focused on my family. I was like, my dad, my mum, my brother, my sister, everyone. Like, school just went out the window. Like,
yeah.
But I could, like, the teachers were great. I will say, like, a lot of the teachers were like, don't worry. Like, if I didn't have homework done or something like that, they're like, just don't worry. Just most of the teachers anyways.
Yeah.
Most of them were like, it's fine. Don't worry. Just be with your family. Like, I went to school purely just for to see my friends to socialise and have a bit of a break from what was going on at home.
And did you miss it, school? I'm sure you did, in a way.
I missed seeing my friends and I missed having the crack. But at the time, I didn't want to go to school. Like, I was coming up with all sorts of excuses. Like, I remember one day, I just didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave. So I went to the bathroom. I don't think my mum knows this. She'll know now anyways. I got a glass of water and I filled my mouth with water and I went to the bathroom and I left the door slightly open and I started pretending to vomit in the toilet because I didn't want to.
Don't be giving away the tricks. Please.
There's a trick now for people. But I didn't want to go.
So I definitely did that when I was younger.
I was just like, oh, and I was just pretending to get sick. And my mum was like, oh, you poor thing. Like, I'd say now, some of the time she knew full well that, like, I just didn't want to go.
Oh.
I'd be like, yeah, my belly's just really sore. My head's really sore. I can't go. She was getting texts. I'd say I'd go into school at 9 and she'd get a message at 11 being like, I'm going home.
Yeah.
Because I live like 5 minutes away from the school. Mm. So I could just walk home.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And she'd be like, leave. But, a lot of third year, I will say, I came home for lunch. If I did go into school, I'd go home and I'd have lunch with my dad. I'd sit, go home, because my mum was still working up until Christmas. Even before Christmas, I'd go home, I'd get my dad to pick me up or my mum to pick me up, and I'd go home and I'd have like a club sandwich at my dad at the dinner table, which was nice because he had the house to himself, we had the house to ourselves normally. So I could sit and I'd tell him about everything, and I was having a bit of friend trouble at that time. So I didn't want to be in school.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'd rather be at home with my dad.
Yeah.
So it was not, I'm really glad I did that. Like, that's something I'll always look back on. I'm like,
yeah.
At the time, it sucks because I didn't want to be in school with my friends, but
yeah,
I was with my dad.
It's just, your friendships at that age is everything, you know, at that age. You're, by the way, can we just say, you're what age now?
17.
You're 17. Yeah. I'm absolutely blown away, by the way, but look, I'll get to that in a minute. But like, you know, you're still a teenager, like, you know, yeah, what I mean? It's unbelievable. Like, you forget, you know. But especially to a 14, 15 year, your friends are everything, like,
yeah.
And it was really hard. But at the same time, you knew how important it was that I need to focus on dad,
yeah,
and family.
Like, I probably, like, I will say myself, I'll put my hands up, I wasn't a great friend in, yeah, third year. I just didn't have time for anyone.
I would say you were a great friend, but I couldn't give them your time.
No, I couldn't give them the friendship that they needed or the time that they needed because I just had so many things going on.
Yeah. It was important to be with your dad.
Yeah, and they understood that and they were great because... Oh,
that's good.
I didn't feel like... I still did stuff with my friends and I'd still do stuff, but like I was just an emotional wreck. Like.
Yeah.
And they understood, like, they understood why I was upset and, yeah, they comforted me, but they didn't understand.
Yeah.
But they tried, yeah, to. Which I think was nice.
Which is the best that they could possibly do, I, yeah, suppose.
And like little nice gestures. Like one of my friends, anytime I was sad, she'd come to my house with a little goodie basket and she'd have like my favourite drink.
That's all you need.
Chocolate. And like that, it seems tiny. And she might think it cost her $4.50, probably more now. But cost her $4.50 and it made my week because it's like someone cares and someone's thinking. And
that's lovely.
Because I'm such a bubbly person in school, like I would never, like when I'm with my friends or I'm at school, I always have a happy face on. Like the teacher's like, oh, I've never seen you not smiling. He said that to me this year and he was like, I've never seen you not smiling, Eve. And in my head I was kind of like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah,
out of all people. But
so your dad then is beginning to deteriorate.
Yeah, so March, it was kind of the last 2 weeks of March when I really, really noticed, because it just was so quick. He went from maybe 60%, like 10% in like,
wow,
2 weeks. It was so quick, which was the hardest part of it all.
And the cancer, by the way, at this time is spread throughout.
It's spread throughout. So,
but it was pancreatic cancer.
Pancreatic cancer.
Primary source.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he was just very sick, kind of got to like, he couldn't wash himself.
Mm.
So I'd go up and you'd have a little cloth and I'd clean dad with the cloth and he couldn't use the toilets. We had the little...
The mode.
So we'd use those. So it was, I think it was really hard on him because he was so independent and he was so strong that now he had to ask his wife and his kids to to wash him or to help him use the bathroom. It's so debilitating on him, like. And there was times where, like, he'd kind of text me, but like, so my mum and dad's room is upstairs. Mm. There's one room upstairs and we're all downstairs. And he'd be like, can you bring this up to me? Can you, like, I was up and down those stairs the whole time, bringing him up water, bringing up this, bringing up that. Because he just couldn't get out of bed and go downstairs. So he was really, 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 really deteriorating. And then, so the last week of March was when it all kind of went pear-shaped. So that last week, he was in bed and my mum was like, it was like the last week before Easter. So I was going to get my Easter holidays anyway. So I had 1 week left of school and then it was Easter. And I had my home ec CBA on the Tuesday, or my junior said, do you know when you have to cook your free practice? Like, oh my God. I actually look back and I'm like, I don't know how they accept me. And like, you're not, I scrambled my eggs, my carbonara. I brought pre-made garlic bread in and you're not supposed to do anything. I had it up my sleeve. I just didn't care. I really just didn't care. I was like, just get me done and out of the way. I think I had one fork. I didn't even have a knife for the poor examiner. So like. But so that was my last day of school then for a couple of weeks, that Tuesday. I came home anyways early because I was done early. And my mum was like, you don't have to go to school now for the rest of the week if you want. You can take this week off. You can be with your dad. So me and my dad had a really, really close relationship. Like, I was really close with my dad. Like, my dad was my best friend. I could tell him anything. I could always have the crack with him. Like, I could always go to him. He was kind of like, he was just a messer, like. I'd go for anything. So when I came home from school that day, I went up to my dad's room and they have a TV in the room and we watched Judge Judy for, I'd say, 5 hours up on the bed, eating club sandwiches. That was our little thing. Club sandwiches were our go-to meal. But we sat up on his bed and we watched Judge Judy for 5 or 6 hours, just the two of us, and chatting away about, oh, this person's stupid and I don't know why she's doing that, and just talking about it. And that was kind of the last day of him fully being able to have a proper conversation over and back. So the Wednesday, obviously, I didn't go to school. I was at home, you know, we were all just kind of at home. My brother and sister stayed home as well. My mum had us all home. And that's kind of when my mum realised we don't have 2 months left. We have 2 days. But she didn't have 2 days, but she's like, we have a couple of days left, maybe a week. So she started making the calls then. I was like, I think you should come down. So my dad's sister came down and she stayed up at my neighbor's, so she was able to, you know, come in, see my dad. Like, she had been over and back at the house, but she stayed. And then my dad's other daughter, my stepsister, she came down as well, just to kind of have a conversation while he still could, because he was losing the ability to speak and to talk and his mobility and all that stuff. So everyone was down, everyone was chatting and the house was busy, like, there was people in there. So Wednesday came and went, and then Thursday was the last day Dad was alive. So I woke up in the morning, went up to this was kind of like my schedule now, I kind of had a bit of a schedule going. I'd go up and I'd sit with Dad and he sweat so much in the night, he'd have the sweats. So I'd get the towel, cold water, and I'd wash him down or whatever, chat to him for a while, or just, I would talk to him. He wouldn't have to respond, but I'd talk because he couldn't, he couldn't respond. And, you know, it was late enough then that night and my sister went to bed and I went up with my sister to say goodnight because mum was down in the kitchen do whatever. And she said goodnight to Dad and he said, goodnight, love you. And that was the last thing he ever said, because from that point on, he just couldn't get any more words out. He had nicknames for all of us. So she was Bop, called her goodnight, little Bop. Color his little Bop, like. So he said, goodnight, Bop, love you lots. I was Pud or Pumpkin, and then my brother was Bud, or I was Nevy. It was one of the two. So that was the last thing he ever said to all of us. So my sister then went to bed, and then I went to bed that night. And you know when you just have that feeling? I just had a gut feeling. I was like, something's not right. And I heard someone running past my window. And it was my aunt going up to my dad. I was like, I need to be up there. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I was like, I want to be up there. So I went up to my mom and I was like, oh, I have a headache. Can I have a paracetamol? Didn't have a headache. I just wanted an excuse to go up. And she was like, yeah. She was like, we don't know. Will your dad make it through the night? Do you want to stay up here and be with him? And I was like, yeah. So this was about, I'd say, 12:30. at this stage, so my mum went down to my brother and she was like, do you want to be here? And he was just like, I just can't. He was just like, I don't want to be there. Like, he was 11, I think.
God.
So I went up with my dad and my mum and my auntie kind of gave us about half an hour, 45 minutes, just so I could get out everything I wanted to say. So I kind of, like, he couldn't say anything. His eyes were closed, but you could see his chest going up and down. So I kind of just cuddled up into him in the bed and I was just kind of like, oh, telling him how much I loved him, my favorite memories and all this. And he was like, he couldn't speak and he couldn't anything, but you could see the tears. Like, he had tears coming down his face. So it was really hard because you just have to tell him how much I loved him. And that's, like, at 15, having to say that to your dad in a bed in the middle of the night was heartbreaking. And I knew he could hear me because I could see the tears. But, like, it was just hard. Like, I was just telling him how much I loved him and how much I'll miss him and how, in my head, I was like, it's not true. I was like, he's fine. Like, he'll wake up in the morning and it will all be better. But I think it was maybe 3 o'clock and I was just so emotionally tired because I'd been bawling my eyes out all night because I was like, it's not real. And I was like, I think I'm just going to go to bed for an hour. Can you wake me up if anything happens? And then an hour later, my mum woke me up and she was like, yeah, he passed away. So I think it was 5 o'clock in the morning. She woke me up and she was like, he passed away. He didn't say anything else, but we saw his chest stop. So I'm really glad that I had that experience, that I could sit with him and, like, I know he could hear it.
Yeah.
He could hear everything I was saying and he could hear how much I loved him. Like, my dad knew how much I loved him. Like, it wasn't a thing he ever had to question. And I knew how much my dad loved me. So I knew I didn't need him to hear him say it. I just knew.
Yeah.
Because he said it all the time. And he'd always just, he was just so, like, he loved his family. He did. He really did. He was the true family man. So I can't remember a lot from that day just because it was such
trauma,
such a blur. Like, I still, at that point, I was like, no, dad's fine. He'll wake up. He'll be okay. It's okay. He's just sleeping. They've got it wrong. So my mum rang the doctor and two of his closest friends. And they all came upstairs and seeing, like, people I've grown up with, my dad's friends who I've grown up with, crying, I was like, this actually could be happening. But I still myself, I was like, it's not. Really? It's not real. So they all came down and there was people everywhere and they were organizing everything. And I have my mum's auntie and uncle are from Australia or live in Australia and America. So they had to fly home. So we had dad at home for up until Wednesday. So we had dad at home for a long time. I think it was Thursday even. We had him for nearly a week at home.
God.
Which made it hard.
Did it?
Because every morning I'd wake up and he was there. Like, I still thought in my head, he'll be okay. He'll sit up in the coffin because we had him in the living room in the coffin. But, like, he just didn't even look like dad. Because, you know, they put the makeup on them and everything like that. He just didn't look like my dad, and he didn't feel, because they're cold, like, and it was just having to go in, and because I'd go in and hug him every night before bed, and, like, he was just freezing. He was just so cold, and he wasn't smiling. That was the worst part, because he was always smiling. That was the hardest part for me, I think, because he was always smiling and laughing, and then for him not to be and have seen his face, which it just broke me completely, because
it's not right. Like,
no, and it's not. And people were coming in and people were like, I'm so sorry and everything like that. And I was just like, my life is completely different now. So they had the funeral and they buried him. And it was the biggest funeral the priest has ever seen in the village. Like, when we were burying him, there were still people walking behind the coffin. Like, so many people came. I was actually blown away with how many people were there and how many people came to support our family.
It's a com- sort of a comfort, isn't it?
Yeah, knowing that so many people were there. Like, it was crazy how many people were there. Like, I actually couldn't get over how many people came and everything like that. But after the funeral, like, just the way you dip the sandwiches, you dip the tea. I was just like, just get me home. It's like, I just want to go home. Everyone was here was laughing and smiling. And I was like, I've just buried my dad. It's not fair.
It's not a time to chit chat.
So I was like, I just want to go home. And my mum kind of agreed. She was like, I just want to go home as well. So the four of us went home and we still had people in the house, which was, so it wasn't like it was completely empty or silent. Yeah. But like, I just got home and I just sobbed for hours because I was like, if Annie kind of hit me, because he wasn't at home then, I got home and he wasn't home. So it was a really emotional week. And because we had him so long at home, it kind of dragged the whole process out. Like, I'm so grateful we had him at home.
I know, but for you.
But there wasn't any, like, I couldn't accept it while I could still see him.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Like, I couldn't be like, my dad's dead when I could still look at him and touch him and feel him.
Yeah.
Whereas when we buried him, I was like, he is. They wouldn't bury someone who's alive.
You were 14. So I suppose in a way.
It's 15 just, then.
Sorry, 15. But like, you probably needed to see that him actually gone before you would.
Yeah.
Your brain would say he's gone.
Yeah. Exactly. So that was, I was lucky enough that I had my 2 weeks of Easter holidays. I didn't have to get time off school to kind of process it all. But I was just like, I didn't know what to do with myself because I had such a routine built up of going up to dad, chatting to dad and chatting to mum and everyone that I kind of was like, I just didn't know what to do. I was like, do I just.
And did you go quiet? Like, you know, as in. Who do you talk to? Like,
and yeah, I try. Like, my mum, obviously, I chatted to my mum, and I have a really close relationship where I can talk to my mum. But she also didn't get it either, and I didn't get what she was going. I was 15, obviously, but she'd lost her husband. I'd lost my dad, so it was too very. Like, we could agree on we missed him and all this stuff, but I just felt like I just didn't have anyone to talk to about it or anyone to. I felt like I just no one would listen to me. What I was trying to say, because I was so angry. I was sad, I was angry, I was confused. I had every emotion under the sun for the first couple of months, which is completely normal.
Yeah.
But like, I also do remember I was like, my family, I was all lovely too. Like, everything was wrong, but I was just kind of horrible, I think. I will say it, like, I wasn't.
I'm laughing because, no, you, yeah, I'm sure that's how you felt.
I felt like I was horrible to everyone.
You were heartbroken.
I was.
That's what you actually were.
Yeah. Not. So I really struggled kind of adapting to what changed and, you know, what my life was going to be like. And
you were in pain.
Yeah. And like, I'd remember I'd be like looking at photos every night before I'd go to bed because I was like, so I could remember his face. Because the thing with dad is he has these little eye wrinkles when he smiled. So I'd always look at the same picture with the smile lines because it comforted me so much. And I could sleep knowing I've seen my dad. So that kind of first month or two, I actually can't remember a lot from it.
Yeah.
I think it was just such a blur for me. I had so much emotions going on that I just couldn't like process anything.
Yeah.
Obviously, I had my junior cert. I sat it, which I was proud of myself for doing because it was 5 weeks after my dad passed away. I had to sit a junior cert. I just started to kind of say I did it rather than to get the grades. Like, I didn't care what I got. Like, if I failed everything, I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, if I do it. And it was kind of a distraction to the, like, I could do a bit of study, like an hour study. And I could, the weather was really nice. So I could go uptown with my friends. So it was nice that I kind of had a little bit of, like, when we got back to school, as much as I hated it, it was nice that I had a routine.
Yeah.
Going and that I could
stay busy a little bit.
Stay busy because I myself know I need to be busy or else all the emotions come out.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But I like myself being busy. But it was like, there's still times during that, like, I'd run up the stairs and I'd get home from school to tell dad something and I was like, he's not here. And I'd go to text him during the day about something that happened because I'd always be texting him over and back during school about something that happened or a test I got back or. And I'd pick out the phone and I'd be texting them and I'm like, I'd send it anyways. That's the thing. I'd always send them, whether or not, because I don't know. It was just something I did. Yeah, I'd send the message anyways, and I'd, even though I knew he was never going to see it. But we had Dad's phone, so it was nice that I could...
It was your way of, I suppose, talking to him.
Yeah, exactly. Because I wasn't a fan... Like, a lot of people like going to the graves, and that's their thing, but I just couldn't... It just makes me too sad.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I just can't sit at the grave because it's just like...
I don't feel like they're there.
No, I don't either. It's just like... I just get awkward as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm like talking out loud and I'm like, is someone watching me?
I do that too.
Yeah.
You know, people say, talk to them. I'm like, no, because I look like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we, he was really involved with the soccer club. So they put up a little bench up there for him. And it's kind of looking out into the sea.
Oh.
And it's really, the lake, not the sea. Looking out onto the lake. And it's really nice and it's got a nice little plaque and everything. And I go up there and I put my headphones in and I bring the dog because my dad and the dog would always go out on walks together. And it was, you know.
Yeah.
And that was kind of where I felt the most connected to him because he kind of, there was the breeze and he'd always said that like, oh, when you feel the breeze, you'll know I'm there. Like that's me blowing onto your cheek and stuff like that. So I liked that, and playing sports connected me to him a lot because he was really big into the sports. I loved the sports and I love sports, but I think the first couple of matches back, I was a mess. And I put so much pressure on myself to do well because I was like, oh, dad would want me to do well. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to do well in sports. And I think that kind of pushed me away from it a bit now, like my love for it's a bit gone because of the pressure I put myself under.
Okay.
During that time, because all I wanted to do was be really, really, really good, and if I made any sort of mistake, like I'd go home and cry about it for 2 hours.
Okay.
Whether or not it was a mistake I was crying about or something else, I'm not sure, but the love for the sports definitely fizzled out a bit because of the pressure I put on myself. Because I'd always grown up around sports. Like dad was my soccer coach, mum was my Gaelic coach. It was just sports in our house. That was just the house we were. But it was just hard, you know, trying to get my life back. And I remember I'd be chatting with my friends, and this is obviously, they don't understand, they don't realise, but they'd be like, oh yeah, the boy I fancy doesn't like me back, and or he kissed this woman at the disco the last day, and I'd be kind of, and they'd be like, oh, Niamh, like, are you not upset about this? Like, the guy you were chatting to is with another girl. And I'm like, I actually just don't care. Like, suddenly all those things that seemed so big to me a couple of months ago didn't seem that big now.
It's amazing how quick, like, you grow up.
Yeah, like, I was just like, it's not a big deal. And it made me feel quite lonely as well because they were all conversing about this and this boy and this boy and what this girl said about them. And it just didn't seem that big of a problem to me. I'm like, I have bigger things to be worrying about, and you're here talking to me about this guy and this guy. I just didn't care.
I get that, but it's like, as someone who's sadly old enough to be your mother but feels like she's 17 still, but like, you know, that's not how it should be. That's the sad part, is that you should give a shit about the
boy. I should give a shit about, you know, the boy, like getting with someone else.
Yeah.
Like, that should be a big thing for me, but it just wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just hard because the conversations we used to have before, where I'd be like up, all riled up, I wasn't anymore. And like, they just wouldn't understand. Like they tried to, but it was like, they just wouldn't understand that I just wanted my dad.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted. I didn't care about this, that and the other. I just wanted my dad and I wanted my family back to normal. Like, you know, they'd be talking about, like, it's because people just don't realize, they say something super insensitive. They're like, yeah, like, my dad has to go away for 2 weeks and I don't know what I'm going to do without him, or...
Jeez.
People just don't realise, I think.
Know.
But then when they say it, I was just like, this is my life, like, do you know?
So you're living in a world where you just feel so isolated. And,
yeah, because no one understands. Like, even, like, when I try to explain to them, like, they'd be like, oh, but, like, you have so many people. Like, we don't have a really tight-knit family. Like, all my family live away. I don't have anyone. Like, super close to me that I can call. And like, my dad didn't have any brothers. Mm. So it's not like I can ask my uncle stuff about my dad and stuff like that.
But regardless, no one can replace him.
No one can replace my dad. And I think people realize that quite quickly because a couple of his friends tried
to step in.
And yeah. I appreciated it so much. And it was nice to have that kind of connection because they're a lot like my dad. A lot of his friends in a way, like they're all funny. They're all up for the crack. They all do the sports. They're all messers. So it was nice whenever I was with them, I could feel connected to dad.
Yeah.
But it still wasn't dad, like, but it was just kind of getting used to, obviously I'm never going to really get used to what my life is like, but like, you know, I'd always, when I'd be setting the table for dinner, I'd put out 5 forks and knives instead of 4 and like things like that. And like, I'd be sitting waiting for them to come over the cattle grid to come home and I'd be waiting and waiting and waiting. No one, nothing's going to come. But in my head, I was like, no, he'll be home in 5 minutes from work. So it was still a lot of denial. Like I really, really struggled with that. But we decided that summer that we are going to go away. We were like, we'll go to Italy. We'll go for 2 weeks. See, get out of here, get out of the place because we needed a break. But it was the worst holiday ever.
Really?
The worst holiday ever. Yeah. I bawled the entire time because it just didn't feel like a family holiday because it was me, my mom, my brother and my sister. That was it.
It's probably families everywhere then with dads.
Yeah, and then, you know, we'd go out for dinner and there'd be people with their dads and it would just break my heart because I'm like, I don't have that. And I think that actually was hard because we left the day before Father's Day. We arrived on Father's Day and everyone has their posts up on social media about, oh, my dad, and posting their dad, and knowing that I don't have that was hard. And being in a different country where I felt so far away from him was really difficult. But yeah, seeing stuff like that, like you'd see I used to work in a restaurant and I'd see mum, dads and daughters together having dinner. And I spent more time crying in the work toilets than I did at work because I knew I was never going to have that and it just upset me so much.
It's just everywhere, isn't it?
It's everywhere you go, you see like dads and daughters and people don't realize that something so small of a dad swinging his daughter on a swing can be so triggering or something like that.
Walking a daughter up the aisle, you see a clip of someone's wedding.
Oh, I cry all the time at those on TikTok. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to walk me down the aisle. Just all those things that girls, I shouldn't really have to be thinking about is what I do have to be thinking about.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I'm thinking about myself, but I'm also always thinking about my little brother and sister because I'm like, my brother has to grow up without a dad and my sister has to grow up because my sister was quite young. So like I have all these memories of my dad because I was 15 when he passed. I have 15 years where my sister is like 6 or 7. So she's still quite young. And I'd feel guilty sometimes. I'd be like, how come I have all these memories with dad and they don't? Which I shouldn't really be. It's not my fault.
No, of course.
It's not. But I felt like.
That's how you feel though.
I owed them something. But yeah, I just felt I felt like I had to look after them all the time and this is what I need to do to look after them and I'm going to protect them from stuff and I need to be there for them because I want to be there for them. I just felt really, really strongly like I need to be there for my brother and sister all the time. I need to watch over them. Like I need to be like, I felt like a second parent in a way. Like when we went on the holidays, if we were at the beach, I'd be like, watch my sister like a hawk. I'd be like, okay, I need to make sure she's fine because mum could be looking over with McDarren and I'd need to be watching Roisin. Like I put an immense amount of pressure on to step up and nearly be like a second mother. Yeah. I didn't need to be.
Yeah.
But I think it was kind of a safety thing for me because I liked the fact that I could look after them.
Okay. And gave you comfort.
It gave me comfort knowing I was minding someone, even though I didn't feel like I had like my mum obviously was unreal throughout that whole time, but I didn't have like a someone to really look out for me.
Yeah.
So it felt nice that I could do that for my brother and sister. And I felt a lot of comfort in knowing that they're okay and that they know, like, they know they can come to me about anything.
Yeah.
And I'll be them for them no matter what.
Amazing. So then you got a second blow.
Yeah, we did.
Something I've been thinking about a lot lately is how grief lives in our body. It's not just in our minds. It settles into your chest, your shoulders, your stomach. It can feel so heavy. And I know that stuck feeling because I was stuck for years myself. The only thing that helped me begin to lift myself out of that hole, even a tiny bit, was movement. But I had to go really gently at the beginning. I just had no motivation to get up and do a workout. That's why I wanted to share something that might help. It's called EcoFitness, and it's a beautiful, gentle online movement space created by Corina Duffy. Corina's been at rock bottom herself, and so she's created this with people like you in mind, especially if you're grieving or going through something hard. This isn't about pushing yourself or chasing big fitness goals. I imagine that's the last thing on your mind at the moment. It's for the days when you're in your pajamas or maybe even in tears. It's about moving just enough to feel a tiny bit better, to reconnect with your body in the gentlest way. EcoFitness gives you 4 live 30-minute gentle workouts each week, a full on-demand library, and thoughtful coaching messages to help build small, healthy habits, especially through life's tougher moments. Corina is offering the listeners to this podcast a 30-day free trial of her app, and I'd really encourage you to just give it a try. There's a link in the show notes. Just click through to get started. You can cancel anytime, no pressure, just an invitation. If you're feeling stuck, this could be a gentle place just to begin. So visit the show notes, click on the link and give it a go.
So 9 months later, New Year's Eve, my sister was feeling really unwell and we were supposed to be going up to my cousin's for New Year's Eve. But my mom decided we weren't going to go because my sister, Roisin, who was 8 at the time, was feeling really unwell, and she was like, look, she's a bit of a bug or something. We're not going to go up. So we stayed home anyways. And the New Year's Day, my sister just got worse and worse. She was just feeling awful. So my mum was like, I'm going to bring her into A&E and see if she has a fever or something, because it wasn't breaking. Like, nothing, Nurofen wasn't helping her, paracetamol wasn't helping her. So she was like, I'll bring her into hospital and I'll chat to you guys later. Will only be a couple of hours. And then we got a call from my mum saying that one of my friend's dad is bringing us into the hospital. I was like, what now? So I hadn't been in the hospital since my dad had passed. So all the emotions came running back to me. And we met my mum and my sister in the hospital, and she was like, your sister has leukemia. So not even 10 months after my dad died of cancer, my sister got diagnosed with the same thing.
That's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, it just really, it was like another blow. I was like, this.
Did you even know what leukemia was?
I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know what to expect, because my neighbor had leukemia, but I was young, so I couldn't really remember a lot of it. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was just when your hair falls out. I thought that's what leukemia was. But then when my mum was kind of explaining that they're going to have to go to Crumlin for a while, I was kind of like, okay. So then me and my brother had to drive home to an empty house. Me and my brother had to go home after finding out that our sister had leukemia to an empty house. Just the two of us. And it was just silence the whole way home in the car with my dad's friend, because we were just both trying to process what we just got told. And then to have to go home to an empty house with no one in there, after just finding that news out, was horrible. And I'll never forget it. We both went up to my dad's room and we sat in the bed and we just cried together. Because it was just so...
Oh, you poor things.
It just felt so much comfort that we could be in dad's room. So that was... It was hard. Now, we have a great family that have minded us since we were younger. They left their holidays from Cork early to come up and be with us for a couple of days while my mum kind of sorted things out, and while she kind of figured out what she was going to do, because the treatment they were putting my sister on, it was in Crumlin. They couldn't do it from home like they did with my dad. So my mom and my sister were going to be in Crumlin for weeks at a time. And especially that first month or two, like they were never home. Like they were home maybe twice a week, from what I can remember anyways. They were always in Crumlin. So my granddad would come down a lot of the time, and my granddad kind of lived with us then for a while. But it was still so lonely because we'd gone from a family of five to a family of four to a family of two at that time anyways.
In the house, yeah.
In the house. It was just so silent. It was so silent. I'd come home from school. I was in TY at the time, so it wasn't like I had a lot of homework to be doing or anything, but I'd come home from school, I'd make the dinner, give the kitchen a clean. I'd make sure my brother all had all his stuff ready for soccer or whatever, clean up after dinner, chat to my granddad, do a bit. I was also working during TY. So I'd go to work, come home. And that was kind of my life. I wasn't living. I was just doing what I had to do to get by.
That is so, so hard.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not even a year. Your dad isn't even gone a year. And then your mom, who you need. And like I'm a mom, so I'm also thinking you're a poor mother, my God.
Mm-hmm.
But like just for you, like you needed your mom.
I needed my mum and I couldn't. And she tried her best and she'd ring me every night and she'd ring us and chat to us. But it wasn't the same
because
I couldn't give her a hug if I was upset. Yeah, so it was really hard. And I think a lot of people were kind of naive. Everyone was always asking because my mum was in Crumlin all the time. So I was kind of the face of the family around the town. People were like, oh, how's your mum? How's your sister? It's so hard for them. And no one would ever ask about me and my brother because people didn't realise that we were so alone.
I know.
Like
you get forgotten.
We got forgotten. It was like, your poor sister, she's going through so much. Your poor mom. And as much as it sucks for them, and I can't imagine that, we were also going through something completely different.
For sure.
We had to grieve our dad by ourselves and learn how to, we were just lonely. Like I have so much life skills because of it. Like I know how to make a dinner because it was just something I had to do. But like it was so lonely and people didn't realize that it wasn't just my sister and my mum who were suffering.
Yeah.
That we were going through something different, but still.
That's what I'm saying. You know, you do think your poor mother, your poor sister. But my head goes to like you guys being left at home on your own. And I feel bad nearly saying that because it wasn't your mom's fault. It wasn't anyone's fault.
No, it wasn't anyone's fault, but it was just the way.
But that was the fact of the matter. You were left at home. Like it was awful.
It was awful. And, you know, my heart broke for my sister because I was like, there's nothing. I felt like I needed to fix it.
Were you scared that she would die?
Petrified. I genuinely was petrified because I'd watched it take my dad so quickly.
Yeah.
I was so afraid that it would be the same for my sister, even though it was two completely different types of cancers and types of illness. And they caught on to my sister's a lot earlier.
Did you have a lot of anxiety?
Yeah. But I've always been a very anxious girl. Like when I was younger, I couldn't stay the night at a friend's house because I was so afraid something would happen to my mum and dad. I couldn't go for play dates. I couldn't be away from my mum and dad.
Mm.
I just would be so anxious all the time that something bad would happen.
That obviously ramped up then when all this was going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. So I really struggled with my sleep during that time because I was just up worrying.
Yeah.
And up thinking, this is going to happen, this is going to happen and everything. So when we did get to see my sister, when we did get to go up to Crumlin to visit her, it was really nice but really sad at the same time because I hated leaving because my sister was eight. No, she wasn't. She was nine. She was eight when she got diagnosed and she spent her ninth birthday in hospital in Crumlin. And having to leave your nine-year-old sister who's kind of up here in a place she doesn't know with people she doesn't know, and she knew herself what she had. Like my mum told her, because that was one thing with my mum. She never lied to us about what was going on. We always knew what was going on, what to expect, but she just didn't understand. She was like, why do you have to go? And she was like, why can I not just come home to you guys? And in my head, I was like, we want you home. Like, we really do, but you can't. So we'd go up to Crumlin and we'd come down and then we'd stay. We'd go back home then, and it was back to the silence and no mom. And no dad. And then people were dropping in stuff, like people would drop in a dinner and people would drop in a bag of treats for us or something, which was nice that we weren't worrying. Like, we never had to worry about food throughout that whole thing. We always knew that we had dinner in the freezer. The freezer's still full of food, I'd say, but stuff people gave us. But people were really generous because we had a GoFundMe set up because my mum hadn't worked in 2 years because she had to be a carer for my dad. So they set up a GoFundMe and like that did insane. Like the amount of money that was raised for us and the support people gave to us was
crazy.
But you
needed it though.
We did. Like mum wasn't working.
There's no money coming in.
There was no I was the only source of income in the family for my waitressing job. And I never asked my mum for money. I never did. I was like, that's why I liked working, because I was like, I have my own money. I don't have to ask my mum, could you buy this for me? Could you buy that for me? It was nice that we had that. I think it was nice for my mum that she had that security knowing that she doesn't have to go back to work. Yeah. She couldn't go back to work. She had to mind my sister. So then it was 2 months of really, really heavy treatment in Crumlin. She wasn't up there for a full 2 months, but she was up there a lot. Like, I didn't really see much of my sister and my mum. And when she was home, she was upset. She was on steroids, so those made her quite angry and made her say stuff she wouldn't normally say if she wasn't on the steroids. And it was quite hard listening to the stuff she said when she came home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as bad as it sounds, I used to be kind of upset with how much attention my sister would get from people.
Mm-hmm.
And how much, you know, like she'd get presents all the time. Like she'd get boxes and boxes of Lego and dolls and everything like that. And when she was home, everyone was looking at Roisin and wondering how my sister was. And even when my mum and Roisin were home, I wasn't getting the attention I would do on a normal day. And it's not like I need attention.
No, I get you though.
But I needed a bit of...
No, I know.
So it was hard having to... Because I felt guilty for being angry about it. I was like, I shouldn't be mad at my sister. Like, it's not her fault.
I know.
But I was just so... I just wanted someone to realise that I was going through something too. Yeah, so they were home a lot then. But then they were up and down from Crumlin all the time. So they were never really... When they were home, they weren't home. They were up and down and there was bloodstone all the time. There was chemo all the time. They're up a lot, and anytime she had any bit of like a fever or a cough, she'd have to go to Galway Hospital. She was there in Galway Hospital for a week one time. It was just like, it was kind of back to how it used to be with Dad, going into hospitals and coming home and talking to my sister and talking to my mum and trying to balance out that I got time with my sister and I got time with my mum, and same with my brother.
Mm.
It made me and my brother really close, I will say. That whole experience of, you know, being alone, because we had to rely on each other. Like, we had to be friends. We had to be nice to each other, because it would have made the whole process way harder on both of us.
You didn't have anyone else. You just kind of had each
other. We had each other. And like, I was the only one who understood it for him, and he was the only one who understood it for me. And like, he's a teenage boy. So he's like, you know, probably not wanting to be with his sister all the time. But we have quite a good relationship because of it.
Mm.
And like, I'm really good friends with him, and he tells me everything. He'll come to me about something and tell me something, and I can do the same for him. And it's nice that a positive came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could have gone a different way.
Yeah.
I could have not been friends with my brother, and it could have forced a strain on us or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't. And it was nice that I had that person that when I'd come home, we could watch a movie together or something on the couch and kind of have a bit of, try and at least have a bit of normality.
That's the perfect age that you end up hating each other.
Exactly, like, yeah.
I've been those ages and you hate each other at that age. So it's nice that you, because you understood each other.
Exactly. And he knew what I was going through to an extent, and I knew what he was going through to an extent. And we could say stuff to each other without feeling bad. Like, I could be like, I'm really frustrated about this, or, and he'd be like, I knew I could say it to him, and he wouldn't be like, she shouldn't be saying that. Like,
mm.
So it was nice, really, really nice that me and my brother came out of it with that. So they're home now a bit more, way more than they used to be up in Crumlin.
So this is just recent. So your sister is still, I suppose.
She's still undergoing treatment. Like they were in Crumlin there on Monday.
Holy.
4 days ago.
Like, it's unbelievable that all this has happened.
Yeah. Like it really is. And I think it's changed me as a person, definitely, like how I see things and how I deal with problems and stuff that come up. But like it's crazy how much has happened in 2 years.
Yeah.
Like we lost dad in 9 months, if even, like really, 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 really quick. And then we lost my dad. Yeah. Lost him in 9 months. Sister got diagnosed 9 months later and she's still doing ongoing treatment.
You're still in the thick of it, like.
Yeah, we still are. And like we will be for another while, like still maintenance for another, like they think the chemo is there, the cancer is gone. But she's still on chemo every night and still on.
She
take the chemo at home.
Okay.
But like she's still on treatment and undergoing and still in Crumlin a good bit and stuff. And we still have to be really careful about like if she has like a nosebleed or even something small like that, it can be a huge telltale that something's wrong.
Right.
So you kind of always have to be on high alert. But like, yeah, it's just such a different household to what it was 2 years ago. And like a different dynamic in the family because it's just so quiet at home. And a lot of people don't realize because they come to my house and obviously, you know, my mum will be chatting to them and everyone will be chatting. But then when they go, it's kind of like silence again because the excitement of a visitor is gone. Like we just, it's hard to explain, but it's just so quiet, even at dinner time. Before, we'd all be chatting away, having a laugh at dinner, but now there'll be a couple of conversations in and it's because we're missing such a huge person in our life. Like, he held everything together. He did. Like, he was just the glue. And he'd have us all laughing. And if there was any bit of tension or if anyone was fighting, you wouldn't be fighting anymore if he was in the room because he'd just make the both of you laugh. So,
and like, it's forever changed, isn't it?
It has.
Even, you know, you're saying there's just silence, but even if you did all have chats and conversations, there's just always someone missing.
Yeah, and you notice it.
But everyone's also around that table grieving in their own way. Everyone. Yeah. Everyone's worried. You can't be the carefree people that you ever were.
Exactly.
Because he's gone, but also because what else is happening?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
there's
really
a lot
hard.
On the family and everyone's going through their own thing and
then that's lonely for you because who do you lean on?
Yeah.
Because everyone's going through their own thing.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's hard. It definitely is. And I'm really like we have a quite close family. Like we can tell each other anything, which is nice that I know if I am upset, I can tell my mum something.
Yeah.
And that she'll listen. But it's just, it's hard because then I'm like, who does my mum have to talk to? Like I'm a 17-year-old. It's not like I'm able to have the conversations she probably wants to have with me either.
And do you did you do any sort of professional like therapy or anything that helped you?
Yeah, I'd been in therapy since I was younger for my anxiety, so therapy definitely was a huge thing for me. It worked for me.
Mm.
It didn't work for my brother. He tried it, didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to do it, but it worked for me because I could just talk for an hour or however I feel. I could say whatever I wanted to say, feel however I wanted to feel, and I knew I wasn't getting judged for it. And like I like had no filter in those sessions. I'd say whatever I wanted and I just feel like I could breathe after. Like it was once a week I had them and I'd look forward to going because I could just get everything out and everything said.
But then you still don't see anyone anywhere. Online,
because
our whole lives is online.
Yeah.
How important would it be to see someone like you sitting here now?
I think it would have helped me a lot originally, knowing that like the feelings I felt were valid. Like I'd feel 101 different emotions and I'm like, why am I feeling like this? Like why is it that I'm feeling like this or thinking like this or acting like this, or even to know that I'm not alone? Because I felt so alone in that process because it hadn't happened to anyone I knew before.
Yeah.
Like knowing that you have people out there that understand what you're going through and that can relate to you in some way. And that's something someone says, I can relate to.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, you're so young, you shouldn't have to be. It's going back to that thing you should be worried about. Stupid boys.
I know. It's just hard, like, because all my friends obviously have their own stuff going on at home and everyone has their own stuff. But this, I just felt like I had no one. Even with my friends, and they were chatting away about this and the other, and I'd have the crack with them, but then I'd get that feeling, I want to go home.
Yeah.
I just want to be with my family. Because obviously I had that huge anxiety the first time my dad was sick, that whenever I left, something bad would happen. And I still get that to this day.
Yeah.
That when I'm away, something might happen to my mum, or something might happen to my brother, something might happen to sister, someone, anything. Like, it still is a huge part of how I think.
So you're living in fear a little bit.
Yeah, I am. And I can understand it to a level.
Yeah.
Because of everything that happened. But it's hard to kind of push it aside. I'm like, it'll be okay. Like, it won't, nothing will happen. So it's just...
Do you get to be a teenager at times?
I definitely do get to be a teenager at times. Like, I do enjoy, I love my nights out and I love seeing my friends. And I definitely make sure I make time for that. And I think my friends are a huge part of my life now.
Yeah.
Like, I need people to thrive. I need to be with my friends who I can laugh with. Like, that's a huge part of, my friends are a huge part of who I am. And I think I wouldn't be where I was today if I didn't have the strong friendship group I had that I knew I could lean on whenever I needed, and vice versa. They're a huge part of who I am. And I know sometimes they might be thinking, oh, she's a bit needy. She's always wanted to be with us. Like, I'd always be in the group chat constantly being like, does someone want to go for a walk, or does someone want to do this? But I just love being with my friends because I just feel I can just have the crack with them.
Connection as well.
Yeah. So they're a huge part of this whole process of, you know, of grieving, because I can go out and have a good time. But as much as I can have a good time with them, I know I can also talk to them too about how I feel. They may not understand, but they'll listen.
That's good.
They'll always listen if I have something to say.
Yeah. They're not supposed to understand, you see.
No.
But that's good. They're doing the best that they can. And that is just to not be ignorant.
Exactly.
And say, shut up.
Yeah.
You know?
They're just there for me whenever I need it. And I'll always be thankful that I have that group that I can count on whenever I need.
There's really such a need for, like, some sort of a support group for teenagers.
I think so. I think it would make a huge difference.
That's what you need to do.
That's what I need to do.
You are so impressive. You are so intelligent. You're so aware. It's phenomenal. So for anyone listening at home, I'm like, you know, sometimes people will say, you know, my son would love to come on, he's 15. And I always worry. I'm like, I don't know, you know. Like, never did I think I would sit across from someone who is so aware. Like, we were laughing with your mom outside. She's like, I don't think you need to worry.
Yeah.
But like,
I could have the hind legs off a donkey. Like, forever.
But that's lovely.
Yeah.
But I think that in time, I don't know right now, because you're going through, you need help, you need support. But I think in time, you are going to do so much from this experience.
It's definitely something I'd want to do.
Yeah.
Because there's not a group in Galway anyways that I'm aware of that have that.
There's support, one called Hope Space. Have you heard of them?
Never heard of them.
Yeah, see, I probably need to get a list of stuff together on my website or something. Mm. It's called Hope Space for children. I think it's up to the age of 17.
Really?
Maybe more, yeah.
Yeah.
But still and all, there's, you know, there's always room for more.
Yeah, I think just also connecting people, because there's, you don't realise how much people have actually gone through something like this until you've gone through it. Like, I've had people reach out to me on like Instagram being like, I lost my mum 2 years ago. I understand how it feels. And you may not speak to them ever again, or you may not have many conversations with them, but it's nice knowing that this person I can come to.
Yeah.
They'd get it. And I think that's really important because sometimes you just need someone to relate to.
Maybe you need to start like a social media page, you know, for teenagers who've lost a parent. You'd be well able.
Yeah. Start a little influencing era.
Totally. Step into it, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're brilliant. You're like, you're so impressive, I have to say. And I know anyone that listens to this, like you are going to help so many people by this because I know it already. I know when the lovely Sequina was on, it's like there's moms and dads at home worrying about their 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 17-year-old. Yeah. And there's also 14, 15-year-olds who need to hear you. And like there's so many people that will need to hear your experience because it isn't spoken about. A lot of teenagers won't speak, you know.
Some will speak.
Yeah, but here, way more so nowadays. Like I think that era of, I'm thinking of my own nephews. He's 15 now and he lost both his mom and dad. But he wouldn't dream of sitting across from you. But maybe if he hears, you know.
If he hears and even like parents, they can hear how they can handle someone going through grief. And like the one thing I'd always say is you have to let them feel how they want to feel.
Yeah.
Don't try put a name on it or rationalize it. Don't make them feel okay. Like if I'm feeling sad, let me feel sad. If I'm feeling angry, let me feel angry. I think it, because if you're constantly trying to put like a positive spin on it or like trying to make them feel, you shouldn't be feeling this way. Like, look at this. I've always just said to my mum, and my mum has always said to me, she always just lets me feel how I want to feel.
Mm.
And it definitely benefited me that I could understand why I'm feeling this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I was angry, I could be like, why am I angry? I wouldn't have my mum being like, well, you're angry because of this, or but you should be happy because of this.
Yeah.
I could sit there, be angry, and then a couple of minutes later, be like, I was angry then. This is why I was angry. That's okay.
Okay. So you weren't, there wasn't a roadblock put in place. As
no.
In, stop that now.
Stop that now.
But you probably find that just in general, other generations are probably like saying, but you know now, come on now.
Yeah.
Is that so frustrating? Like,
it is the most frustrating thing ever. Even when people are like, oh, but they're in a better place now.
Yeah, piss off.
He's not in pain anymore. I'm like, the best place he could be is beside me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm.
Like, it's just, I don't know. I think it's insane. And I'd never say it to someone now. Like, I'd never be like, they're in such a better place now, or you know, they're at ease now, because they might be, but to the person who's grieving,
you're making it sound like it's better that they're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it's not at all.
Is there anything that you do like that, or that has helped in terms of like connecting sort of with your dad still, in terms of like maybe writing a letter or going to a place? You said the bench.
Yeah.
Or is that not a thing at all?
I like going to the woods because that's such a connection I have with him. We used to go for walks in the woods together. So I do go walking in the woods, and when I go walking, normally I put my AirPods in. I don't put my AirPods in, and I just listen to like the birds, the trees, the wind, because it's such a dad sound and a dad smell.
Okay.
Because he was constantly cutting down trees and all that stuff. So I think
you like that.
I like being around places he was, or that scents and sounds that bring me back to him. That's a huge part of it all. And I also, I listen to a video of his laugh every night before I go to bed. To this day, every night.
You like it?
I just think, and I know I will never forget the way he sounds like or the way he laughs, but I think hearing it, it's nice, and I can just feel, and it sounds silly, but I always go, what is one thing Dad would be proud of me for doing today? Because the one thing Dad had always said was, I don't care what you do. The only, like, he was chill enough. Like, he didn't have many rules. The one rule he always had was, you just have to be kind. Like, always just carry that kindness with you. Because he was just such a kind person and a kind soul to everyone he met. He was never rude, except on a football pitch, but that's a different story. But he was such a kind person. So he was always just, if you can carry that kindness with you, you'll go far in life. So I always, before I go to bed, think of one thing I did today that Dad would be proud of, that would have made Dad laugh, or something that connects me to Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds kind of silly, but it works for me, because I know that I'm carrying my dad with me through myself, because he was just such a kind person.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to pass that on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to, not because I feel like I have to.
I get that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're living as best a life you can.
Yeah.
In his honor.
Exactly.
You get to. You're here and you want to do him proud.
I want to do him so proud.
Well,
so
you you have. Oh my God. I mean, I have a daughter. I could only dream that she would be as good as you today, sitting across, being able to.
Thank you.
But also being able to like, I'm big into this, you know, like emotions and being able, allowing people. What I do apparently is called gentle parenting, where I would never be like, stop that now. Like, yeah. You know, like I'm like, let them feel what they need to feel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think.
It's healthy as hell.
It's so healthy. And like, I used to think that like my emotional side of me and my empathy side of me was like a bit of a curse and I'd constantly be upset. But I've come to terms that like it is such a nice gift to carry.
Yeah.
And that being so emotionally aware and being emotional and being empathetic is so, such a nice trait to have.
For sure.
Like I used to be like, oh, crying again.
Yeah, no.
But it is so important. And I think it's so important to feel.
Fair play to you.
The emotions.
I'm going to link all of your, where do you hang out most? Instagram or TikTok?
Instagram, probably. Okay.
I'll link that because I really feel like people need to watch you and where you're going to go, because anyone with children or with teenagers, I would love them to kind of just follow along, because I'm going to encourage you to do something.
Okay.
Maybe not right now, but you need to.
Yeah.
Like your voice is so important. But thank you so much for coming in, and you've been phenomenal. So impressive. And I'm sorry for all you've been through and that you're still going through.
Yeah.
But thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're so welcome.